You heard the legend.
Yeah!
Kickstart your day with the man who dominated the field like no other. Wayne Carey. And the sports journo who's done it all, Mark Howard. The Dead Set Legends do breakfast on Triple M.
Beautiful morning, isn't it?
How do you go springing out of bed? My alarm went off at 4:01 this morning. It's a different scene getting up to do breakfast radio, isn't it?
It is different. It's probably about, I'm an early riser, but not quite this early.
You haven't shaved this morning, which is most unusual. You're normally well presented.
I'm going in for an operation this morning. A procedure. So, I thought, why have a shave when you're just going to lie in bed and get operated on?
We'll discuss that procedure very shortly. Really excited by the guest we got on today. 6:45, Peter Garrett comes on to talk politics of Midnight Oil. Were you a Midnight Oil fan?
Obviously, I listened to the, it was around when I was a young boy, so yeah.
What do you think of his dancing technique? I need you to ask him about that when he comes in here.
Not the best.
Okay, you're going to put that to him?
It's better than mine.
Yeah, that's it. Daryl Beattie comes in to talk about MotoGP at 7:30.
Oh, he's a good man.
Well, this is a man that had such a nasty accident that the chain of his motorbike, and I hope you're not eating your Wheaties, ripped the five toes off one of his feet.
No.
So he can't wear thongs, which absolutely shatters the kid. So we can ask him about that as well. Neil Danaher at 8 o'clock. Check in with
Still
how Neil's travelling.
Great job, Neil.
And Nui Takoa at just before 9 o'clock. He's written about you before, so it'll be good to get Nui in here for a chat.
He's got some. He's got an interesting story in the paper today.
Has he?
Eddie's young boy. Yeah, going to be on Neighbours.
On Neighbours? Young Maguire, is he?
Yes.
Duck, we've done enough of this now that I feel I know you reasonably well. You're always coming in a good mood for Dead Set Legends or breakfast or afternoon or the footy or whatever we're doing, but you just came in a little bit off centre today and then you announced to all you're having a procedure.
I am having a procedure. I'm in a good mood, but I am. I've woken up this morning and the first thing, it's funny, when you're allowed to drink, you don't wake up and just want a drink of water. Well, the first thing I wanted to do was have a drink of water. And I'm not allowed to, obviously, because I'm fasting from midnight last night.
What are you having done?
A hernia operation.
Right.
So it's only a keyhole operation these days. It used to be quite serious, but
how'd
basically
you do it?
Your bladder. I'm not sure how I did it. I think I've had it for over a year, and I remember sort of getting dressed one day, and I had this sort of big lump, and I thought, is that a tumor? But
it's not a tumor.
It's not a tumor. It was a hernia. So I've got to have it done today. So
we'll be right to back up tomorrow morning.
Well, I hope so. If not, well, not.
Right. So what am I going to just roll out 3 hours by myself?
You're going to have to find some other dummy.
It shouldn't be too hard. But you told me, you said you might be a bit grumpy because you couldn't drink any water.
We just can't drink, yeah.
Right.
I'm not, the eating thing's not an issue. I can fast, not eat for
so how long can you not drink water for?
Well, can't drink until after you have the operation. So, I don't know, it might be sort of 2 o'clock this afternoon before I get to have a drink.
So 12 hours.
Yeah.
I think you're carrying on a bit, to be honest. And
why?
I bring your attention to a gentleman in the WA bush by the name of Reginald Fogarty. You might have saw him on the news last night.
I did.
A hunter who was out on a hunting trip out on the edge of the Great Western Victoria Desert out there, the middle of nowhere, very warm out there. He didn't drink water for 6 days and you're banging on about it for 12 hours.
6 days. Didn't take any water with him?
Well, he went out there on a well-organised hunting trip.
Yeah, really well-organised.
Well, where he was chasing camels and he was wearing shorts, a T-shirt, a cap and thongs, and he found...
Hang on. He's gone to the desert.
Yes.
He's got a cap, thongs,
well, he's got
T-shirt
a cap
on.
That's all right.
He's really smart hunter, this bloke.
Well, he's going out to get a camel and he finds a camel near his camp, so he goes and gets the camel, and I think he might have actually caught the camel and shot it. I guess that's what you do when you're a hunter. But he survived out there for 6 days and the police were praising him, Duck, because he managed to survive by eating black ants.
Hang on.
He ate ants.
You got this guru hunter who goes out there with no water in his songs and he's eating ants. That's not a great hunter as far as I'm concerned.
No, he's no guru. Well, he caught a camel, but obviously you can't eat a camel. And he was found just 15 kilometres from his campsite. He wasn't well. He hadn't drunk any water for 6 days, but he'd survived.
And he was only found 15K.
Yes.
Well, put some runners on, champ.
What, so you're not...
Get back to the... No.
You don't think he was the great white hunter?
I don't think so, no.
You know my favourite part of the story?
He's no Crocodile Dundee.
My favourite part of the story is they found him through Indigenous trackers. Now, these guys, they can track a dingo across 3,000 kilometres. They are the best of the best of the best, Duck.
They didn't know how to track a thong?
Well, no. How they actually tracked him down in the end was he lost one of his thongs. So it was an unusual series of footprints because one was his foot
You're kidding
and one was his thong.
Are you making this up?
This is it's true. So the best in the business managed to track him down because you don't see your average dingo with a thong and a no thong. And that's how they found Reginald.
That is unbelievable. He should give up hunting, that bloke.
Yeah, well, he's not very well, but his wife's got him now. She's cried. She's found him alive. She's very happy. It's a miracle. I don't think he'll be having any antsy in a hurry. But our best two, Reginald, we might try and get him on at some stage, although I'm tipping he's already signed a deal with 60 Minutes as we speak.
I wouldn't have thought so.
Now, I've just been reading to you an article in the paper in the Herald Sun at the moment that Brad Scott, the coach of the Kangaroos, his contract expires at the end of 2016. And Carl DeLina down there at the Kangaroos said, listen, in the next sort of month or two, we'll get an extension and get him re-signed.
I don't like it, Howie. I don't like the fact that Nathan Buckley's in a very similar position. Since Bucks has taken over the Collingwood Footy Club, and this isn't a – I like Bucks, and I actually think Collingwood have got a good young list, but the facts are – they've gone backwards since he's taken over. And the facts are Brad Scott has got the Kangaroo Footy Club into two preliminary finals. They've both got a year to run. I think you let it run. Let it get to three quarters of the way through next year.
Well, round then, sort of 15,
and then
round 16
absolutely
next year.
Judge them on their whole piece of work. Don't re-sign them now. Because if the Kangaroos go backwards, let's say they don't make the, well, they don't make the finals. They only just scraped into the finals. Yes, they made a preliminary final, but they just scraped in. So they don't make it next year. And they give him a two, three-year extension. And then another bad year after that. And they say, see you later. And they have to pay him out 2 years. And it's the same with Nathan Buckley. If he doesn't get them into the finals next year and they go backwards again, then you say, well, you know, why would you do that? It's the same as off one bad year. If you give a club, if you give a coach, you know, 3 or 4 years, Bolton at Carlton this year, if he has one bad year or two bad years, you don't sack him. Let him finish out his tenure and then say, okay, now let's see what you've done over that whole piece of work. Now we work out whether we re-sign you. I just think they do it far too often and they regret it a year or so later when they have to sack them. We see it all the time.
With big, big payouts. The counter argument there, and the club obviously should never be influenced by the media, but I can tell you now, if the Kangaroos are, I don't know, 8-8 come round 16 and the coach is not re-signed, that is all you will see across the back page of the paper for 4, 5, 6 weeks. Haven't re-signed,
yeah,
will they keep
it? But if they're eight,
hang on, I'm just saying, that's what the result of not signing him will be.
Well, the media, don't be sucked in by
the
media.
Don't be swayed.
No, don't be swayed by the media at all. You've got to stand by your convictions and say, if they were 8-8 next year, then you'd be sitting there saying, well, you know what, we've made the right decision not to give him the extension, given that they've played in two preliminary finals in a row. So I just think that you just, you know, hold your powder, just sit back and say, okay, let's just see where we are halfway through next year and then make the decision from that.
The current Kangaroos group, I think they were talking possibly Ryan Bastanac leaving the footy club, which would be a shame. The current
Kangaroos group, couldn't get a game during the year.
Well, you know, you're exactly right. And when I say a shame, it's just he's a nice fella. But if he's not playing good footy, he's not playing good footy. Is the current group, and I think they're looking to add to it again, possibly they're talking to Jeremy Howe as well, is the current setup they've got there a premiership setup?
The current group's not a premiership setup, I don't think. They've only got 23 games, home and away games left in this group. I mean, Petrie, Harvey, you know, Waite, you would say Ferrito, who hasn't announced anything yet. But there's a big group. Del Sano's the other one. So they're a group that might only have 1 year, that whole, all of those players. So, you know, they're in a precarious situation where they, you know, they could sustain where they're at or they could drop away fairly quickly. If they add a little bit more talent like they did last year with Higgins and Waite, then who knows? But that's the magical question. They have got a group of guys that are right at the end of their careers. So I just wouldn't be re-signing or giving extensions right now. And that's got nothing to do or anything against Brad Scott, because I think that he's done a good job. I like Brad. I think he handles himself very well. That's just what I believe in terms of what you do and don't do with coaches.
You've got to be very careful with that re-sign word. The great Tim Webster used to dominate on Sports Tonight. Nathan Buckley had signed another contract with the Collingwood Football Club years ago, and I remember watching Sports Tonight, and instead of saying Nathan Buckley has re-signed with the Collingwood Football Club, old Timmy Webster, Nathan Buckley has resigned from the Collingwood Football Club.
Really?
Very similar on the auto cue. You can get it wrong. Peter Garrett is about to join us. Midnight Oil, big fan? Not a big fan?
Grew up with him. Not right. A massive, massive fan, but, knew a few of the songs. Couldn't name them.
Ever seen them in concert or not?
No, you have?
Yeah, I saw them in concert during uni, and I was just transfixed by the way the man danced. That's how I want you to kick off the interview.
What, just ask him about his dance? Yes. I'm sure he's been asked that a couple of times before.
Oh, so you're going to come up with something original, eh?
Absolutely.
Okay, what type of stuff are you thinking about?
When did he lose his hair?
Oh, good, good. Okay, you go with that off the top. All right, you go with that. I'm looking forward to that. Duck, we've got a beautiful book in front of us, Peter Garrett, a memoir, Big Blue Sky. And it's great to have Pete in here with us. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, guys.
Congratulations on the book. What type of process did you find writing a memoirs? Was it a cathartic process, or was it stressful, or was it easy, or was it fun? How'd you find it?
All of the above.
Right.
Yeah. Look, it's really interesting when you sit down and start to have a look at what you've done. And when I first started, I thought, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to put it all together, where the bits and pieces are going to fit. But after a while, I sort of picked up a rhythm. It's a little bit like a job. If you set yourself the timelines, you think, okay, have a cup of tea, have a coffee in the morning, put in 5 or 6 hours, try and clock out about 500 or 600 words, have a look at it at the end of the day. And after a while, I started to enjoy it, and it kept on flowing.
Having written a book myself, and you do,
yes, mate.
That's exactly right. You sort of sit down. Was there stuff that you originally put in that you had to take out afterwards, or you were pretty good all the way through?
Wayne, I reckon I could have written another 500 pages, you know? Yep.
Duck could have written another 17,000, Peter, just quietly.
Well, he's playing more games of footy than
that's
I
true, that's true.
Nah, look, it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, and I reckon anyone can do it. The part for me that really struck me strong, and for people listening, is that you've got your first sort of 16, 17 years, maybe till your early 20s, and you remember it very vividly. And once you start writing about it, growing up, playing, kids, whatever it was, that stuff is very rich. And then the further you go, the quicker it becomes and the more compressed it becomes. Mm. So it's actually fantastic to hear people's stories about when they were little, because that sort of explains what they were like when they were big.
I do want to ask you, because I've had a little bit of a flick through the book. I want to ask when you became follically challenged, because you look at the book and you've got a timeline, and you've got a beautiful blonde locks.
Like a long time ago, mate.
I think it was about 74, and then 75, you had no hair. So what happened?
I used to body surf at North Narrabeen, which is one of the best known surfing spots in northern beaches of Sydney. And my brother and I had one of these underwater cameras, and we used to go out and catch guys getting big waves. But every time I pulled off a snapper, it'd have like one of these lines across it, you know, when you print the photo. So I thought I'll go and get the haircut, and it got it cut short, and I just looked like someone working in a bank. So I just said to the guy, "Take it all off," and that was it.
The hard-hitting questions, I'm going to follow up while I'm here, Pete. One of the most amazing things I've ever seen, my brother-in-law, Chris Bors, got married, and as literally they said, blah, 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 kiss your wife, he did that, your bride, beautiful, and then a Midnight Oil song came on, and he did one of the most extraordinary impressions of your dancing I've ever seen, 13 seconds after he got married. It was a phenomenal thing. Where did you develop the technique that now blokes are doing directly after they got married?
Yeah, well, that's a great compliment. Look, I can't really say too much about it, because if I think about it, I probably wouldn't have done it.
Well, that's what I advised him directly after he got married as well, just quietly.
No, really, you know, the Oars are a very powerful band, you know, and you're close to it. You're right in the furnace. And I think once that starts, it just comes up through your feet. And I never really thought about it consciously. I mean, obviously I saw what I was doing later on, and I used to go over to the guys and sort of hang around when they were playing their solos or whatever. But I think it was just the power of the band and just a really unconscious, totally like not giving any thought to it, but just really going for the max.
When you're writing a book and you're writing about other people in the book, is that something you have to be really conscious about, isn't it?
Yes, it is. People are still alive, you know, and some of them are your mates. So, look, I've been a pretty private person over the years. I really wanted to protect the family, particularly during the Oils period when there was a lot of interest in us. And I'm a bit blokey, you know, I don't go to the doctor unless my wife sort of kicks me out the door. So it was interesting for me to sort of open up a little bit about who was close to me. And if I didn't have something real good to say about somebody, I let it alone, with a couple of exceptions. And I think for my mates and for the guys in the band, it was just a case of being honest, trying to describe them as best as I could, and then wait for the phone calls.
Yeah. Peter Garrett's got a book out, a memoir, Big Blue Sky. Pete's going to stick around because next, Duck, you and I are going to speak politics with Pete, so that segment should go about 18 seconds.
I've got one question for you, Pete.
That's next. Dead Set Legends Do Breakfast with Peter Garrett. Pete, you wrote some interesting stuff in your book. I saw you on the Sunday night program a couple of nights ago. By gee, you had some interesting things to say about the former Prime Minister as well, Kevin Rudd. This is a little bit of it.
His career is a series of you know, passionate embraces of issues that he then walks away from, of, you know, running government in a certain way in one direction, then turning around and heading off in another direction a couple of days later, of treating people with enormous amounts of contempt, and making the business of the country almost ungovernable.
You didn't miss him, Pete, it'd be fair to say.
Well, look, this is a reflection as I wrote my memoir, and that's how I felt it. And it's interesting because I got to the end point, and when Rudd came back and replaced Julia Gillard, I decided I wouldn't serve under him. And I was writing about that in the book. And I mean, the amazing thing for me actually is that we got a lot done as a government at the time, despite the fact that we had these leadership changes and that Rudd was a very poor manager of government and the sort of person who, when you saw him undermining Julia through that whole period of our second term, when we were doing incredibly important things on stuff like school education and the like, just makes you question sort of where the guy was at.
What's the most frustrating thing about going into politics? You clearly go in wanting to make a difference. Is that the frustrating thing? It's just so hard to get through all the red tape?
No, you know what I reckon it is? I think it's that people don't quite get why you've done it. And they don't realise that you're joining a team and you're going to do the best that you can in the team. And one of the things I've done is I've chucked up on my website some of the stuff that we got done, because people don't think you get stuff done because they don't read about it in the media. They don't hear about it on radio. And I'm totally, totally proud of what I did. You know, I'd do it again. I've got no regrets. And I think that despite all the carry-on, we did some good things for the country. Now, there's more to do. Of course there is. So it's frustrating that people don't get to see what you actually do. But otherwise, it's a privilege to serve at that high level. You know, I don't care what anyone says. You know, I love the country and I think the institutions are important. I was pleased I got a shot.
Pete, rightly or wrongly, I guess in some ways your name in politics, and it is wrongly, because as you said, you do a massive body of work, but I guess in the general Australian public, there'd be a link between yourself and the government and what happened with the insulation after the GFC. How did you feel about that all the time? I see you read in the book, after the first death, my bones felt heavy when I got out of bed each morning. No one wants something like that tied to them, rightly or wrongly, Peter.
No, and you've got to just square up to the fact that it's happened, that it happened in a government, in a program that you had responsibility for. I thought the reaction at the time, this is apart from the parents of the kids, which is totally understandable, was completely over the top in terms of the attacks that came into the parliament. I mean, I ended up in a royal commission, you know, sort of after I came out of the parliament. No adverse findings against me. You know, they found that the department hadn't advised us on stuff properly, but people don't really want to hear those things at the time, and I understand that. So I felt I did the best I could. Every time, you know, they said, look, there's a way of making this safer, do X or do Y, we always did it. And we always had safety in the front of our minds, but it's still something that, you know, you won't forget.
The Oils, are we getting back together? Are we going to see that dancing out on stage again?
Yeah, look, it's a big question. Look, you know, it's up to the guys. It's up to us to sit down and figure out whether we want to do it or not, whether the stars align. You know, Bonesy's living over in Nashville and he's playing. The boys are busy doing other things. We're not ruling it out, so you never know. It might get ruled in. But look, it's got to be for the right reason for this band. We did so much in our time. I think if we're excited about it and there's a good reason, it could happen.
Oh, yes. You have to do it. You watch 60 Minutes the other night. You look at Cold Chisel. They're back together. They're singing around. I mean, surely that gives you a little bit of motivation.
Oh, well, I got a lot of time for Jimmy, and I think, you know, they're still making good music. And I mean, interestingly, you know, when I write in the memoir, I thought about who the people I really got off on, and it'll be one guy that some people probably won't know, one guy that people will know. But I went and saw Muddy Waters when I was a student at ANU, like in another century. And I mean, he must have been, I don't know, 45 or 50, and he was just sensational. I mean, the guy was cooking. So it's not about age, I know that. It's actually about the spirit of what you're doing. And I think if the spirit's right, then it's possible. But, you know, we're not going to start making the announcements on air today, guys. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, there goes that bloody headline. Anyway, hey, Pete, listen, we really appreciate your time. Peter Garrett, a memoir, Big Blue Sky. Best of luck with everything. Yep. And I think so many music fans would love to see you back out there. Obviously, it's a decision for you and the band, but I think there'd be a lot of warmth if that's the path you took. Thanks for giving us some of your time. Best of luck with the book.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
duck, the front page of the paper this morning, the Herald Sun, Putin's rebels did it. The findings have come through for the Dutch investigation team about what on earth happened on July 17 on the flight from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur, where 298 people were killed last year. Gavin Gray is our man in London. Good morning, Gavin. Good evening to you. The news overnight is that a Russian-made missile brought down MH17. What can you tell us?
Yeah, that's right. Morning to you, Mark and Wayne. The report, I think, answers quite a few questions, but it also asks a lot more questions. Now, yes, they are saying it was brought down by a Russian-made Buk missile, but the Russians and the Ukrainian forces both use Buk missiles. And indeed, at the same time as the massive report was being released by the Dutch authorities, the Dutch Safety Board, a press conference was being held by the company that makes the Buk missiles, claiming two things. So first of all, that the fragments of the missile that struck the plane were from a very old model and not in use by the Russian army, but in use by the Ukrainian army. And also they said that the trajectory of the torpedo, of the warhead, must mean that it came from Ukraine. So in other words, the report does not apportion blame, but it does say it was downed by a missile, and now both sides are blaming each other as to who fired it.
Gavin, do you think they'll ever get to the bottom of this?
I think it's going to be very difficult to get a definitive thing unless one of those present comes forward and says, we did it, which would remain extremely unlikely. I think one of the other points for the families today, most of the victims were Dutch, 196. That's why some had dual nationality, but that is why the Dutch Safety Board took this over. And for them and for their families, today was important because they learned that actually the missile struck the cockpit separated from the rest of the plane and fell to the ground slightly earlier than the rest of the fuselage. Now, a lot of the people who were relatives were very concerned, Wayne and Mark, that you know, their relatives would have been conscious and knowing that they were crashing to the ground for several minutes, or at least a lot of seconds. That appears not to have been the case. There was debris in a lot of the shrapnel in a lot of the bodies, which meant they would have died pretty much instantaneously.
Gavin, 298 people died. So that's a drop in a pool that continues to have circles go out wider and wider with families and relatives and loved ones, people that want answers and, well, at the end of the day, want criminal charges brought. From what I can understand, it's another few months till the criminal investigation by the Dutch comes through. Surely all these people out there that have been affected want some results, some end results from what's happened here. And it's got the feel that people aren't going to get those results, Gavin.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is going to be very difficult. But there is this prosecution looking at going ahead, the Dutch in charge of that. But I think it is, as you say, going to be extremely difficult to actually see that this criminal investigation could actually lead to arrests or imprisonment or anything like that. It is going to be extremely difficult, I think, to reach that point. But one of the things that has come out of this as well is that the plane should not have been flying over the conflict area. Now, MH17 was not the only aeroplane, and they weren't the only airline flying over this conflict area, because it was assumed that the planes were flying too high to be in any danger. It was, of course, a terrible mistake, and the reason that planes were being flown over there, I'm afraid, was to save fuel. It was the fastest route to go across that particular continent. Of course, that is now a flight line that got changed soon afterwards. But it was a decision that at the time was absolutely awful and led to this tragedy. And maybe that is part of this private investigation now.
Well, hopefully some answers come out of it, because as you use the word tragedy and there's no other way to describe it. Gavin, we appreciate your time.
Thanks, Gavin.
Cheers, guys.
Back page of the small paper today, just one of the boys, spin legend Shane Warne, has gone back to grassroots training with East Sandringham Boys Cricket Club as he prepares for the big T20, three games that they're playing in massive stadiums in America. We've got the coach.
All the big names.
Well, they are.
Playing over there.
Massive names.
Lara Tendulkar.
Gilly. I think even Courtney Walsh is coming back for a run.
Yeah.
He's in a wheelchair, Courtney Walsh, but see how he goes. We've got the coach of the East Sandringham Boys Cricket Club on the line, the senior coach, Anton Duddy, joins us. Hello, Anton.
Morning, boys. How are you going?
Well, more importantly, how are you going? Why your cricket club, and what was the reception when the great man rolled down there yesterday? Fascinating.
I guess the guys are obviously really excited about him coming down, as you can imagine. And I guess why us? Well, he played a bit of his junior cricket down at East Sandy, and we've got a man by the name of Kim Pitt who coached him, and he's won a heap of Longmuir flags for us, which is A grade. And he got in contact with Kim, and Danny strolled last night to training and rolled the armo, which was awesome.
Has he still got it? Did he bowl a few flippers, a few wrong-uns?
Yeah, he's still got it. I don't think many of the boys got one off the middle, to be honest.
So who was in the nets? Were they all queuing up to face Warnie or to stay away? If I'd been playing cricket there, I would have been that quick to jump in the nets to face him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, we all were. We were all pretty keen to get the pads on and have a go. And he's obviously quite clever. Everyone was sort of wanting to get down the track and get him over the fence, but I don't think there was one. One that went outside the ring, I wouldn't have thought.
So how many overs did he bowl? Did he look fit? We know that he looks after himself these days. He looks pretty fit on the back of the paper.
Oh, most definitely, yeah, he does. He looks in really good shape. So, I don't know, he would have probably bowled maybe 8 overs altogether, I don't know.
Figures?
Oh, probably 20 for 10.
Well, he's in good shape then. 8 overs, 20 for 10. It's a fair day out.
We play on synthetic as well, so the ball probably turns a lot more and bounces a lot more than you would on your standard turf wicket.
Oh yeah, on the old synthetic nets, you love the leggies rolling those out. And how was he received by the boys? Obviously, we were joking around at the start, but this is one of the Wisden's five great cricketers of the 20th century, alongside Bradman and Richards and these guys. An extraordinary chance for your cricketers to get a look and a chat and a touch and a feel, so to speak.
You guys, I'm assuming you guys have met him plenty of times. He's really easy to get along, really approachable. And, you know, the young guys, I think, were sort of in awe. And a few other guys have met him before. But, I guess we're just really excited about it. And they are too. We've got a young leg spinner, Paddy, down there, who was getting some words of wisdom from him. And he started taking a few wickets too.
So is he coming down again?
I think he might be down on Thursday again. So I'm not too sure, but hopefully that'd be good. It'd be great if he is, but looking forward to Saturday with him.
If he's coming, is he playing?
Well, I believe so.
Well, hang on. Just roll back a sec there, one sec. So you think he's going to play for your cricket club? If so, where and when? It doesn't sound like it's confirmed yet. He obviously still has to get through selection on Thursday night, but I think he might be right there.
He might. If there's a spot for him, we might put him in. But, we play down at Duncan Street in Sandringham and at Chisholm Reserve, and the president's just informed me via text message while I've been on the phone that the bar's stocked and the sausages are going to be cooking, and we're hoping he might pull on the white for
it. Did he pad up as well? Did he have a little bit of a bat? He fancies himself with a bat as well?
No, he just rolled the arm over.
And so training, as we let you go, Anton, training this Thursday, what time, basically I'm trying to ask, can Duck and I come down and join the cricket club for a night? Because we'd love nothing better than face the great man. It'd be a once in a lifetime.
Yeah, no, we kick off around 5:30 down at Duncan Street, so you're more than welcome.
Right, nice. Well, we'll see you then at 5:05. Hey, Anton, listen, we appreciate your time. Keep us updated. If you get word that the great man is going to play, we might try and get him on later in the week. But it's a great fillip for your cricket club and just a wonderful story. Thanks for having a chat with us.
No worries. Thanks, boys. Thanks for having us.
That blows great. Me away.
That's what Warnie is the most generous bloke you'll ever meet. He seriously, with his time, I mean, people can be generous with money and everything. He will give you his time. He's a very approachable guy. I have actually faced him at the G, by the way.
Have you? How'd you go?
Well, he deliberately dropped one in short.
Right.
So I was a half pitcher, and I put it to the fielder on the boundary, but he looked after me.
Oh, I'd love nothing. Because you're not going to face Brett Lee. You're not going to face Mitchell Starc because of the fear factor.
Exactly.
But Warnie, you can face. He's going to make a fool of you. But, geez, something to tell the kids about. Good luck to everyone down there. Good on you, Warnie. We need to speak to him this week. You just heard us speaking to the coach of the East Sandringham Boys Cricket Club, where Shane Warne was training yesterday. Warnie's heard that. He's rung in, so we'll get him on the phone in about 10 minutes. But before that, we've got Network 10 Royalty here. The biggest star they've got is Carrie Bickmore.
Well, you're not talking about yourself.
No, it's Carrie Bickmore, and then it's Darryl Beattie. a MotoGP legend, second in a world championship a few years back. Hello, Daz.
How are you, boys? Do you keep him in line here?
No, I try to keep him in line. As you can see, he's up and about. He's got, for a little man, he's got a big ego. Yeah.
Give us a spell. Daz came in here and said, I heard you blokes doing politics. You're talking about the Ukraine. How far out of our depth do you think we've been this morning, Daz?
As far as I normally am all the time.
That's it. Hey, MotoGP this weekend. You're heading down the Sabo after you spend some time with Marc Marquez. It's an amazing story. For those that aren't quite aware, tell us a little bit about Valentino Rossi and what he's hoping to achieve this season.
I think, Howie, it's kind of like, and I know you love your surfing, so it's a bit like, 10 world titles. That's
Kelly.
What he's chasing, yeah. So it's a big deal, and I think more importantly, it's a big deal at his age as a sportsman, and you know that, Duck. It's, the guy's in his mid-30s, which it doesn't sound that old, but for motorcycle racing, he's certainly at the end of his career, but... Yeah, how you do it with me on 10? And I think when you look at the season so far, he's probably not been the fastest guy lap by lap, but he's certainly, I looked at the points yesterday, and he's been in the top three every Grand Prix this year, bar his home Grand Prix, where the weather was certainly made the decider there. So consistency certainly done it for him. It's not like he's going to win this world championship if he does without winning races either. He's won a handful of races, but... I think it's amazing to think that he's been able to get out of bed for a couple of decades and have that drive and still have the drive that he had when we first saw him as a kid. I think that's phenomenal. I got sick of it after a few years.
Does this make him the best ever if he wins the world title this year?
I used to cringe when people asked me that, but yes, definitely. He is. I think, when you look at Agostini, which is really the only guy that's got more, when you read a book, more records ahead of him.
Yep.
But it's a different period, I think, far more competitive through Valentino's time in motorcycle racing. So I think by far the best ever, and certainly by far the best for the sport as far as personality goes.
The MotoGP's on 10, 1 o'clock on Saturday, 11:30 on Sunday. You can see Daryl Beattie in all his glory. Daz, stick around, because Duck wants to ask you about a certain part of your anatomy, not a Bieber-style part of your anatomy, but a certain part of your anatomy.
And he's going under the knife too.
He is this afternoon. He looks edgy about it. We've already spoke to the coach of the East Sandringham Boys Cricket Club, who was down there yesterday. Shane Keith Warne got down there preparing for the Cricket All-Stars Games in America. And the coach said, Ducky bowled 8 overs and got 10 for 20, which is not a bad day out training.
I think it was 20 for 10,
actually. 20 for 10, was it?
Yeah.
Hello, Shane.
Good morning, boys. How are you, all right?
Morning,
well,
very good.
To be honest, I'm extremely excited by the fact that you're out bowling in the nets in suburban cricket. How was it yesterday, and how long since you'd rolled the arm over, great man?
It's been a while since I've rolled the arm over, that's for sure, and I'm feeling it this morning. I can't really move at this stage.
So did you bowl as well as he said you bowled, Warney?
I bowled okay, mate. Yeah, I sort of, as the sort of session got on and sort of after an hour or so, I started to land a few and get a few to rip. But, so it was pretty good. I started to feel okay, but I'm feeling it this morning. My whole right side is really sore.
The Cricket All-Stars, 3 games, New York, November 7, then City Fields, I think, in Houston. And then you wind up at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. Congratulations to you and Sachin for getting this far. I think it's a wonderful concept. For those that aren't aware of it, Warnie, what's it all about? Because it sounds like an absolute corker.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, mate. It's we're basically taking cricket to America. We're playing November 7 in New York, the 11th in Houston, and the 14th in LA. We've got some of the greatest players that have ever played the game. Wozzie McGram, Alan Donald, Matthew Hayden, Glenn McGrath, Ambrose, Walsh, and the list, Callis. The list goes on and on and on. So we've got some wonderful players playing. They'll be pretty competitive games too, I reckon, when you're talking about these sort of players. We might not be at our best, but I reckon that... once we cross that white line, it'll get very, very competitive. It'll be lots of fun. We've got cheerleaders, we've got DJs, we've got entertainment and all sorts of things happening.
Of course you do.
And no doubt you have cheerleaders, Warnie. That I didn't doubt that.
Well, that's a new part of cricket, mate. It's very exciting getting them to jump up and down when we hit a 6 or something like that, or someone takes a good catch. It's a bit of fun. But just to think that on November 7th, myself and Sachin will be walking out on City Field with a drop-in pitch.
Wow.
In New York, about to play a 2020 game. It's pretty amazing.
How's it been received over there, Warnie?
Yeah, good, mate. The ticket sales went berserk to the first sort of few days they opened up. Mainly expats, but we're hoping we'll get a lot of Americans involved too, and they'll come and have a check it out just to see it. We've got a couple of... We haven't got that long to go. We've got about 3 weeks, I think, until the first game. So
are we going to be able to see it, Warnie?
Really well.
Are we going to be able to see it?
Yeah, we're negotiating at the moment with Channel 9, and hopefully they'll be able to get it on. They've just got some games of cricket as well, so we're just looking at logistics and timings and things like that.
Hey, there's plenty of spare spots on Channel 10, Warne. If you want to slide some cricket on, we can fit it anywhere. Pretty much 7 days a week we can whack you on, I reckon.
Yeah. I'm sure, but no, David Gingell is pretty keen to get it on, so hopefully we can sort that out.
The word coming through from the president of the Sandringham Cricket Club confirming, and you can tell us whether this is the case or not, because rumours do abound, that you will play this Saturday for East Sandringham sometime, somewhere. True?
Yeah, that's right, mate. Playing at Duncan Street Reserve. Wow. I first went down there at in 1978 as a nine-year-old. I went down to play at that club. My son still plays football down there. There's a lot of the guys that sort of looked after me, Cuddles and Pity and all Doggy and all the guys down there. They're still there and still looking after a lot of young kids and doing some great stuff. So really excited to be back down there playing. Hopefully we'll get a good crowd down there. A little birdie tells me that Matthew Lloyd actually plays for Bentley A&A as well.
Oh, really?
He'll be on the opposition team. But a few of the guys last night said he plays in the twos.
Yeah, of course he does.
So we're hoping that he'll actually get the selection. Hopefully he performs well at training this week and get selected in the first. And that Lloydie will be playing against us on the weekend.
Now, Shane, as we let you go, you're a man with a great social conscience, the Shane Warne Foundation, etc. Yeah. You're always ready to put your name to a cause. And I see your latest cause is to bring back Tubes, T-O-O-B-S.
Oh, mate. This is of huge significance, and this is a massive movement. The response I have got for Tubes is enormous. Now, I just want to tell you, just quickly, Howie,
yes,
that I have grown up with Tubes. My family has grown up with Tubes. It's the family snack. Now, I haven't been paid contrary to anyone else. I just read the paper on the weekend when I got back from London, and I saw that Tubes been taking off the shelf. Now, Smith, do us all a favour in Australia and get Tubes back. I still haven't heard from them. Please get in touch. We must have Tubes back on the shelves. They are outstanding snack.
Can you still get to the odd 7-Eleven? Are they still on the shelf? They've just been discontinued.
I've looked everywhere, all over the city. I've looked for some Tubes. We want to stock up if they're not going to be there.
Well, I'm going to use the term
back on the shelf.
I'm going to use the term national disgrace, and hopefully this will get something done, Shane.
And I think that's an understatement, Howie. Get Tubes back. Smith, get in touch.
Hey, just as we let you go, give us again the time and the venue where you'll be playing so people can come down and have a look on Saturday.
1 p.m. we start. Hopefully you boys can come down too if you're not doing anything. 1 o'clock down at Duncan Street Reserve at East Sandy. East Sandy and Boys Cricket Club. 1 o'clock we're playing Bentley A&A. Hopefully Lloydie doesn't go hiding and he gets a selection into the first. And you can go and absolutely sledge the crap out of him and barrack for East Sandy. There'll be plenty of pies and sausage rolls on there for everyone as well. So get down there 1 o'clock. At Duncan Street Reserve in Sandringham.
And good maybe stuff. Some Tubes. Good on you, Shane. And best of luck with
it. Bring some Tubes.
Good on you, Warnie. He's on boys. Fire. Shane Warnie. He wants the Tubes to come back. Daryl Beattie is with us to talk all things MotoGP on Network 10 this weekend from 1 on Saturday and 11:30 on Sunday. Ducky, he had the hard-hitting questions with Peter Garrett when you asked him about his hair. Now you're going one-on-one with Daz with a question I'm not prepared to ask.
Well, I'm about to
is
have
it about a, tubes?
I'm about to have an operation in an area that you know is close to a region that you don't want to get too close to.
That's it.
But you've had a really interesting and really serious injury. Tell us a little bit about that.
Which one, Duck?
The one that sort of
foot and a half.
Yes, the foot and a half.
So that's watch
his,
that area.
That's
watch
his line area. With all the girls. Yes. That is. He goes into a bar and says, I've got a foot and a half, and they nearly fall off their bloody chairs, Duck.
Oh, it was, you know what the amazing thing about it is a lot of people talk about my foot, but my foot wasn't what stopped my career. But as far as surgery goes, it was 6 hours.
How'd it happen, Daz?
It's a good sleep.
How'd it happen?
It happened in 94 in Le Mans, where Webber and all those boys raced, Le Mans 24 hour. It went in the chain and it just chopped the end of the whole boot off. So I remember the marshal running over, he fainted, and then I got carted to the medical center, and then they give you the needles and all the good juice. So that was fantastic. And you lay there. Then I laid in hospital for a while, then they air freighted me to Paris and I had surgery, and it went on for years until it was fixed. But I raced 6 weeks later after that in America.
6 weeks later?
Yeah, 6 weeks later. So, but, you know, it's really, at the end of the day, it's not that bad without toes.
They breed them soft these days, don't they?
Well, yeah, I'm about to face them all down there this weekend, yeah. So I better not say that. It's you don't need toes. You know, it hurts walking around for a long time all day long when, you know, I'm carrying Howie around MotoGP. But
you've made the statement you don't need toes. One thing you need toes for is to wear my favourite form of footwear, and that's thongs.
That's devastating. You remember when Corona had those cartons of beer come out and they came with thongs?
Yep.
I used to buy them, and I couldn't use the thongs. So my mates used to grab duct tape the left thong on, and then I could carry my carton of Corona into the venue, and it was perfect.
Who's going to win the MotoGP this weekend, mate?
I knew you were going to ask me that. Again, I don't have an answer for you. The weather looks like it's going to be fine. Yep. So I think Valentino, the Yamahas are strong here. The Hondas are strong here. We all know, without boring everyone, Phillip Island's about having a good tyre at the end of the race because the left-hand side gets destroyed here. It's who manages that best, and it could be Pedrosa, it could be Marquez, it could be Rossi, it could be Lorenzo.
Now, tell me, before I'm going, by the way, first MotoGP, looking forward to it.
But you do a tour.
You take guys on tours. Tell us a little bit about
that. I'd like to take you around down there, but Howie and I will be in the studio, unfortunately. But yeah, the tours I do in the desert are great fun. I do the Simpson Desert. I do the Canning Stock Route, which is over in WA.
Can you do it on a moped?
No, but guys do it on postie bikes. I run into guys in postie bikes in Cape York doing stuff for charities. But once the sand gets deep, they're in a bit of Barney rubble. So
it'll be like old mate that we spoke about this morning that got stuck in the desert for 6 days and ate ants.
Really?
Yes. And lost one of his thongs, and that's how they tracked him. One foot, one thong, one foot, one thong.
I've got
so the Simpson Desert.
They'll find you, old Stumpy over there.
Yeah. Simpson Desert for 7 days.
7 days.
7 days.
Come along. Bring your mate.
I might.
Last man to go on the trip, Craig Lowndes, and just won Bathurst as a result.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, it was all the counselling around the campfire. Don't you know what that's like?
Hey, Daz, we appreciate you coming in the MotoGP on 10 all weekend. Look forward to it, sitting beside you. Have a wonderful week down there. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to go and see Warnie on Saturday.
Yeah, I think we might just put MotoGP just back for half an hour so we can go and see the great man. It'd be a good idea. Now, next guest, Duck. 82 games with the Essendon Football Club, 223 wonderful games in charge of the Melbourne Football Club, arguably done even better and bigger things since he left football. Neil Danaher is in the studio with us. Hello, Neil.
Howie. Duck.
Wonderful to see you in here. You've bounded in here with plenty of energy because we needed a lift. Starting at 6 o'clock, when someone like you rolls in at 8, it just sort of keeps us ticking over, Neil.
The first coffee was ticking in, boys. Well, good to be here. Beautiful day. Beautiful day. Beautiful day tomorrow with me. Head out in the Danaher Drive, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, you've got a big event coming up. But before we get to that, the freeze at the G this year. I remember we did a little chat at a cricket club in the lead up to it, and you said, you know how, if it all goes well with the cure for MND and the freeze at the G, we might be able to raise $250,000. What was the end result of that campaign where we saw all those people on the slides?
Well, back then, there was you and me, Howie, the sporting night, and about 20 people.
That's right. Which is normally how many go to the ones I turn up to, be honest, to be completely honest.
But due to the overwhelming support of football people all over Australia, we ended up raising $2.5 million.
$2.5 million. How does that make you feel, looking back on that period of time?
Well, look, it was overwhelming. I couldn't see that coming, but now it's a huge responsibility to make sure we invest that money. We always said that money would go to the best and brightest researchers in Australia. We've got some great people here, and we're hoping to get a breakthrough, some treatment, some cure for MND.
So how is that money being spent?
Well, we gave $1.5 million to Motor Neurone Research Institute of Australia.
Yep.
They're all the smart people that work out where the researchers are. We don't do that. We hand the money over. And we're bringing a trial to Australia, a trial drug, and that costs quite a bit of money. That's a work in progress, but we'll spend up to $1 million to bring a trial to Australia for Australians with MND. Most trials are done overseas.
Yep.
And run from overseas, but to help our best and brightest, we want them to run the trial.
So of the $1.5 million you gave to research within Australia, what was their budget up to that point? How much did they have?
Well, we, MND get one half of 1% of all federal funding for research.
Right.
So that's roughly $2 million, so right, we're able to double it.
Double
money,
their budget straight right away. And how are you tracking physically?
I'm going well, Howie.
Yep.
There's no one likes a whinger, so, but my legs are good. My arms and shoulders and voice. The trouble with MND, it never stagnates. It never, it progresses. It's always progressing. So, but I'm feeling well, and I've got myself back in good condition for the 4-day trip.
For the 4-day trip, yes.
Three nights on the road with Paul Manahan and Terry Dunham. Might knock me over.
I was going to say, you picked a good crew to travel with.
But I'm a bit smarter now, Harry. I was just giving him a wide berth.
Yeah, don't get caught up in the after drive festivities.
Jump on curemnd.org.au, curemnd.org.au. Neil's going to stick around. He's going to tell us all about that trip, Danaher's Drive, where you can get out and get involved in the country, as well as a big gala dinner coming up on November 28 at the National Gallery, which you can also see on curemnd.org.au. Neil will fill us in on that shortly, and his thoughts on the footy and whether the Hawks can go 4 in a row. Jump on curemnd.org.au. That's curemnd.org.au. Two events. There's one, a big gala ball on November 28. Kate Sobrano seeing all sorts of other people at the National Gallery, Victoria. You can get tickets for that right now. But Neil, you're heading off on Danaher's Drive around Victoria, which, wow, she's a fair trip. Tell us a bit about it. You're covering some K's.
Well, it's a 4-day trip. Three nights. We head off tomorrow from the MCG. The Premier will wave us off, Howie. Great supporter of our event, as a CPA and Kia and Ray White. We've got about 200 people.
Yep.
We're about fun and fundraising for MND. So we head down the Great Ocean Road to Warrnambool. Great night down there, Thursday night.
Yep.
Then up to Halls Gap over to Bendigo. Got the big sportsman's nice night, and we got a couple of tables left there.
Who have you got on the sporty?
Got the big, big ticket items there, Duck. We couldn't get you, so we got Gary Lyon.
Oh, beautiful.
Billy Brownless, Sam Kikovich, and the big Brian Taylor.
So that's Friday the 16th.
And there's a couple of tables. There are a couple of tables.
So that's this Friday night in Bendigo. Again, curemnd.org.au if you want to get along to that one. And then you head off to sort of Echuca Way.
Yeah, up to the river. Echuca, lunch at Mulwala. Then a pub band night at Soden's in Orby. Not far from
Duck
Territory and Wagga. You Wagga boys will come down, Duck. They'll come down.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then back Sunday for a welcome home event at the Essendon Football Club. So, yeah, it should be lots of fun. And it's great to take the awareness, the message to the country.
Yep.
The big freeze was obviously in the city, and we're going to the country.
You're explaining we were just having a chat in the break about the 2.5 that you raised at Freeze at the MCG and where that money goes and what the research is aiming to do at this stage. I found it fascinating, Neil, the depth of work involved and how clever the people are and how much money they need to keep ticking over. Yeah, what are they actually trying to achieve?
Yeah, look, right now for MND sufferers like myself and their families, there's not a lot of hope. There's no treatment, no cure. But we're really positive that if we can continue funding, that a breakthrough is not far away. And look, hope is really important for sufferers and their families. So, but we need to be able to consistently bring funding to the table. And we're about awareness, our foundation, awareness, cure and care. And a lot of the funds from Drive, we want to work with the MND state associations who do a great job for care, but again, they need funds as well.
Yep.
So a lot of the funds from the drive will go to helping them care for families.
You have to keep the momentum going,
that's right,
though, because obviously the big freeze at the MCG got it going. So everyone, I tell you what though, if you thought that all the people of Melbourne, and that was great. You get to the country, Neil, and you know this. You're a country boy. They will get behind this. They get behind the Danaher Drive. It'll be and some of the fantastic events, obviously. Yeah, right. Still a couple of tables.
So that's in Bendigo. Bendigo, Friday the 16th. We had a joke about a little sportsman's lunch where you sort of got this off the ground with you and me and not too many other people. And
you were there, Howie. Well, were there right in the basement, mate.
It was right at the start. Brad Hodge was there as well. And you came up on stage, and I think you shocked people, to be honest, when you said what you have for you at this point is a death sentence. And I was sort of discussing with you at that stage how open you were about it and how much effort and time you were going to put in to this, the time that was going to take you away from your family, etc., when you've got a finite date here at some stage, Neil. It's an amazing thing you're doing. How do you deal with the fact that you can see a finish line in some ways, which none of us can? It's a difficult question to ask you.
Well, I couldn't do it without the support of my family. They've been right behind. They were behind everything we've done. They were the ones, my daughter and a boyfriend, they created the beanies, sold the beanies.
Yep.
My wife is involved with the drive. All my kids are involved. We're on the road. So I could not have done it without my family's support. And now we're having a bit of fun. Like I said, it's all about having fun along the way. Going on the road for 4 days with the family and out in this weather, it's going to be great
and
fun.
And a couple of lunatics as well. Some ex-teammates.
So David Neitz is coming along. We've got some demon boys. Of course, Howie, one event in Bendigo, it's called the Danaher Drive Dream Team.
Yep.
Versus the Bendigo Bushies in the goal-kicking extravaganza.
Whoa, there you go. So that's in Bendigo.
It's a free event. We want the community to come out. And look, our team's not looking too good, Duck. It looks good on paper.
You've got a few too many defenders in there. You haven't got – is Nita in there, isn't he?
Yeah, Nita's in there, but he's spruiking a bit, Harry. He's worked down in Hawthorn.
He has.
And he's taking credit for Showmakers.
Oh, is he now?
He is.
He's probably claiming the three flags as well, isn't he, old Nita? QMND.org.au. That's QMND.org.au. Still a couple of tables left in Bendigo on Friday the 16th. A pub night in Albury on Saturday the 17th. That'll be. Get behind Neil. Hey, Neil, thanks for coming and have a chat with us. Good luck with everything, especially on Danaher's Drive coming up. And the gala ball on November 28 at the National Gallery of Victoria.
Good on you, Howie. Thanks, Duck.
Duck, good news. Cricket Victoria unveiling updated plans for the $40 million Junction Oval project redevelopment. And to speak about that, which is wonderful news for cricket and in a way football in the state, is the Minister for Sport, Tourism and Major Events, John Aaron, is on the line. Good morning, John.
Morning, Harry. Good morning, Duck. How are you going?
Yeah, very well. Great to speak to you, John. Fill us in with what's happening at the Junction Oval. This is a project that's been sort of going and coming a couple of times now, but it looks like we're set to go.
Absolutely, and we promised our cricketers a world-class venue and so that they could call it home, and that's exactly what we're doing. This $40 million development will go a long way into making sure that we have a home for cricket. And you know, the clashes that used to occur with the MCG and the football and cricket, it was just ugly. It wasn't good. I mean, we need to fix it, and that's exactly what we're doing today, and making sure that it's front and centre for us, and by 2017... we'll be up and running. No more will the Sheffield Shield go to Tasmania. So that's what it's all about, making sure that we have facilities in place to have these events in Melbourne, the sporting capital of the world.
That's what I wanted to ask you, John. You said 2017. Is that the start of 2017 or the end?
Yes,
or?
Yes. We anticipate that at the start of 2017, we'll be able to use that ground. So next year, there is, as I understand, an agreement between the AFL and Cricket Victoria to share the MCG for the Sheffield Shield, but then after, it'll be free for football at the beginning of the year at the MCG. So it's great news for football and, of course, great news for cricket.
It's a wonderful part of just off Fitzroy Street there. I think you get a few more people actually in to watch the Shield and the one-day games. John, looking at some of the artist impressions of the pictures, looks like a great setup, a couple of new stands and even a bit of increasing size of the ground.
Absolutely. It will be state-of-the-art. I'm not just saying it. It'll have a medical and rehabilitation centre, and, of course, it will also be a dedicated women's facility. As you know, there are lots of women now coming back to playing cricket. It's one of the highest participation rates in sport is cricket, actually. A lot of people may not know this, and that's why we've got to make sure that we have the facilities that are in place to make sure that we accommodate that growth. So This is a very exciting day, and of course, Cricket Victoria has been asking for this for many, many years, and it's now coming to fruition, which is fantastic.
As we let you go, Minister, have you had a kick of the soccer ball lately?
I have. I've kicked the football, and actually, I was in South Korea, announced the President's Cup coming to Melbourne again in 2019, the World Cup Golf next year, and it's all happening in Melbourne. It's fantastic, sporting capital of the world.
You got a tough job, don't you, Minister?
Somebody's got to do it.
we appreciate your time, John. Great news about the Junction Oval.
My pleasure. See ya.
Duck, we've got to treat the next man with respect because he can write in the paper that we are doing a ripping job on this fill-in and we should be doing it more regularly.
Well, you want to be on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. This is your chance.
No, I don't.
So did Nui. He just wrote a big article about it.
Hello, Nui. How are you,
yeah,
great
good
man?
Good morning. That's a great scoop. Thanks, Duck. Yeah.
How they only get we'll go with that. 600 grams of food. How skinny would I be at the end of the thing? Because I'd win it, so I'd be on there for the full 8 weeks. How are you, Nui? Great to see
good,
you.
Mate. Yeah, doing a good job. Doing a great job, actually.
Well, maybe just give us a nice little write-up in the confidential.
I was listening in yesterday. I heard your chat with from Mount Panorama with Craig Lowndes. Yes. I reckon you knew Mount Panorama better than he did.
Yeah, well, I tell you, we won't go into 7 days at Mount Panorama and what it does to you physically, mentally and emotionally, Nui. But a bit going on. I see early in the paper today, really nice story that you've written, an exclusive, that's the only thing you deal in, about Eddie Maguire's son.
Yes. I think the only time I've been at the front of the paper was when I read about you, Doug.
Yeah.
Well, so, now, Nui, that's still a touchy point in this studio. That's not something I'd be going with at this particular juncture.
Well, you have to go after the big names if you want to get
the Crikey, Nui. Anyway, it was nice to see you, Nui. Good on you. what's going on with Ed's son?
We've got a page three story on Xander Maguire, 12-year-old son of Eddie, who has joined the cast of Neighbours.
Xander, is that a stage name or?
It sounds like it is. I like it. It's very showbiz.
Short for Alexander, I presume.
Short for Alexander.
Right.
So Xander Maguire, year 7. He's been cast in Neighbours as Charlie, who's the son of Steph Scully, played by Carla Bonner.
Right.
Who's a mum with a very dodgy past.
Wow.
Well, actually, I read the whole article. It's very interesting. And the way he's approached is very interesting. It sounds like a very mature young man.
Very mature young man. Got hooked into acting after being in a high school musical. Told Eddie, this is what I want to do. This is my passion. And so Eddie drove him out to Nunawading for a screen test. Xander got it all on his own merit. They really liked what he brought to the table. And he'll start filming on Friday and won't be seen on screens until next year.
So he got it on his own merit, but Eddie did roll out there and say, if you don't put my son on, this.
Eddie assures me he's not the typical stage dad and he stayed right out of it. Xander did his screen test and did the lines and went through the process. So, good luck to him. Good luck to him. But anyway, I caught up with Ed. He's in San Sebastian, Spain.
Oh.
He rang in last night. I congratulated him on Xander's progress. I asked Ed, what kind of showbiz advice have you got to give your son? This is what he had to tell the Hot Breakfast.
Yeah, the only advice I give to anybody in show business is be concentrate more on the business side of it rather than the show side of it. The show's the profession and the challenge and the fun. The business is where you keep grounded and don't let things get carried away.
Good advice.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a witness protection program.
He does.
It's a bit tired. I think it was like 4 a.m. in Spain.
And to be honest, if he is in witness protection, he doesn't come back here, then me and Duck can probably do it next week and maybe the week after, Duck, and just sort of roll out the year. What do you think?
Hey, no, I don't think so. I'll tell you what I have been interested in doing. You know I love my reality TV, but the X Factor, a little bit of fighting amongst the judges.
A lot of fighting. Two judges, Guy Sebastian and James Blunt in particular, are attacking Dani Minogue over her song choices. So let's go with this first grab. This is a 14-year-old Georgia Denton singing I'll Be There, a Jackson 5 classic. This was given to her by Dani Minogue, and then she cops it from Guy and James. Let's hear this grab. Don't you know?
I have to say I'm baffled so far with the song choices.
What would you have given her?
Something that speaks
to
her.
What song?
I'm not going to list a bunch of songs now.
I think the song choice is a bit pedestrian. I know you don't take criticism well. That's what we all think. And last time I said this, you bit my head off.
Ooh. By the way, I do love that song. I don't mind the song, but I know how she feels because Ricky Martin had a go at me earlier this year for song choice.
When you sang Sure.
When I sang Sure. But I don't mind that song.
Yeah, well, last night on the show, Luke Jacobs, the host, brought it up with Dani and said, how are you feeling after getting attacked? This is what she had to say.
Danny, last night you copped a lot from criticism from both sides of the judging panel. Do you think it was warranted?
You know what, it's a tough week. Everybody's super nervous and trying to pull out performances that they've never done before. I don't think it all was.
Can you, you know, I've been to counselling. Can you turn to James and tell him how you feel?
I wouldn't be allowed to say that on television.
I like it, Nui.
Big rift. I'm liking these rifts. You, what else is happening?
Oh, hang on. Before that, you just mentioned that we had Ricky Martin on and he didn't turn around to your song of share. Let's give Nui a listen. Would you turn around in your voice chair if you heard this, Nui?
If I could turn back time.
You're not
think
turning,
my, my chair just fell over.
That's it. What else is happening out there in the
just,
wonderful world?
Wrap it up with a bit of tour news. Kendrick Lamar, big rapper on the scene. He's playing Rod Laver Arena in March 20. Pre-sale tickets are going on sale today, 10 a.m. Hot Chip, The Dirty Three and Courtney Barnett will headline the Sugar Mountain Festival. That's January 23 at the VCA down at the Arts Precinct in South Bank. Tickets go on sale on Monday. And The Hives and local band Kingswood have been announced as the support acts for AC/DC, Etihad Stadium on December 6 and 8. I thought I'd leave the show today with this new techno track. We don't play a lot of techno on Triple M.
No, we don't.
But this is funny. This is an Italian producer called Giuseppe Ottavani.
Right.
And he sampled the traffic lights in Australia. He loved the sound of the beep.
Come on, Giuseppe.
Of the traffic lights of the crossing.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Here in Australia. Let's listen to the first verse. And these are the bleeps. This is Giuseppe Ottavani.
Oh, come on, Huey.
So that's the first verse. Now let's hear the chorus.
Oh. Nui, there's people thinking all around Melbourne, am I meant to be crossing the street now? Am I not meant to be crossing the street now? Hey, Nui, thanks for coming in and having a chat with us.
Yeah, I'm going down the street corner now to have a party.
No.
Good luck with the operation today, Duck.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, all
thank
the best
you.
To
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I'll be 1 hour's time. I'll be lying up in bed, Howie.
Is that sort of front page stuff? Carey in hospital blue?
Yeah.
Something
combined
like that,
with
maybe?
You on Celebrity.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, thanks, Nui. Nui Takao, I hope you enjoyed the rest of our guests today. Peter Garrett, Shane Warne and Daryl Beattie talking about the MotoGP. Mate, good luck today. In all seriousness, it's never fun going to hospital.
All good.
Most importantly, make sure you're here Thursday morning tomorrow at 6 o'clock.
That's it.
Because we've got Chris Judd and Jack Riewoldt on the show as well. So that's something to look forward to. Judd, he's got a new book out. So he's had a bit of a discussion to say about some of his former teammates at West Coast.
I've actually read excerpts of it. It's very good.
All right. That's to come. Hope you have a wonderful day. It is going to be 29 degrees in Melbourne today. Get out in the sun. Enjoy yourself. This was the Dead Set Legends Do Breakfast with Mark Howard and Wayne Carey. Nui Takao has been with us. We'll be back tomorrow at 6. See you then.